Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is part three of the Distraction Pieces podcast, Drunk Cast, with Ed Gamble, James Acaster, Chris Glasson, and Stu Whiffin. The end of this Drunk Cast, or you will have heard at the end of part two, we were pretty drunk. The end of this one, me and James are just screaming at each other. I'll also tell you that about 20 minutes after this ended, I was in my bathroom throwing up for the rest of the evening. I ordered a pizza, I ate half a slice, and then threw up for several hours. So that tells you where we got to. I've banged on enough about the Pod Bible listening party on Twitter and the distraction quiz on YouTube. So let's just get into this. This is part three. Huge warning and huge apologies. It gets really loud and really messy. We're on Zoom, so we're all just shouting over each other. It's glitching out. James keeps getting up and walking around his house away from the microphone, so he then can't talk. So it gets messy and confusing, but thank you. And huge love to my producer, Buddy Peace, for putting this together, because this was a shit show. And to try and to make it sound as good as it sounds, surely you can appreciate. If you listen to a lot of stuff that's being recorded over Zoom at the moment, no one is as good as Buddy Peace. So big love to Buddy Peace, the best producer in the podcast game. Not in, obviously, the great Benito is obviously his joint best producer, but he didn't have to work on this. God bless him. So, yes, let's just get into part three. Heavy. I mean, I've said it about five times. Heavy warnings. Heavy warnings. Please don't be offended. This is the Drunk Cast. See you in a bit. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. So regardless of these guys being my mates, they've got a podcast called Hardcore Listening, which is just the guest picks a top five of anything. And it's one of my favourite podcasts to listen to because it's endlessly entertaining. But if there's ever a bit of advert, a better advert for both of you guys going on there, is that they have been sponsored by Hooch. So that's just... Forget the format.
You're not doing yourselves any favours.
Forget the format. Forget other guests. They've been sponsored by Hooch.
Fives is like, I think, just... Maybe because of high fidelity and stuff.
That's where it come from.
It's what we live for, right?
Here's a question.
Autistic man.
I see a lot of things, especially from women, tweeting at the end of the year, going, "I can't wait to see all the men's top lists." Is it a generally male thing of having to order all of our experiences?
I think so. I think that's a thing where it's like it's whatever it is. Like, I think it's an autism thing and things like that. And like at one point, autism was referred to as like extreme maleness. That's how people doctors and scientists are referred to it. And just wanting everything in order, and it brings us comfort, and it makes us feel relaxed. It makes me feel like very calm when I can put everything in a list and go, "Here's my favourite things," and that's what I like.
Oh, if I enjoy an album,
the people
if I really enjoy an album, I have to put it in my document of top albums of the year, so I know it's there, so I'm ready to order it in December.
It's probably a giveaway if you look at Stu's background, and that's where they record them, but. The amount of women they've managed to convince to come on their top five podcast is minimal. It's so few to come into that creepy little bar of
bar.
Why is that? Because there's a sense that we could say it was like because it's a genetic thing. Men are wanting to make these lists, but actually, is it a thing where we make women feel like they can't make those lists? They can't have that kind of influence and stuff, like that could be a thing as well. Like we're all the tastemakers. We say what's good and all.
Or maybe kind of women just want to enjoy stuff without having to fucking put it into a list,
categorize it.
Listen,
to rank it.
Either way, they're better. no matter what way you cut it, by not or whatever reason it is that they haven't joined in, they win. Like it's better.
I had three top fives. On from Hardcore Listen that came to mind then. The first was Brett Goldstein choosing his top five uncomfortable gigs. including a gig in someone's living room. It was absolutely amazing. Number two was Ed Skrein from Deadpool and Ill Manners and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
Choosing his top five Thug Tears tracks. So when hard rappers write an emotional track. And the number three, which trumps all of them, was Body Positivity model Jess Megan picking her top five dinosaurs. You don't need to overthink it, guys. You don't all these better. Fucking complex top fives that are going to reveal huge things about me as an artist and the things I'm into. She's like, aren't dinosaurs wicked? That is the problem with men making their top fives, is it's too personal, and here's what it's going to show about me.
Well, yeah, I don't also, know. When like, we did top
what
five moves.
Everyone else can like argue with me, like, you know, I'm going to say this is my top five. Everyone can argue in the comments, blah, blah, blah. Entertainment-wise, someone going top five dinosaurs, there you go. Speaks for itself.
It's gold.
And what was important was Chris and I hadn't heard of any of the dinosaurs in the top five. They were super indie dinosaurs, weren't they?
I was tempted to kick Jess out for not having T-Rex as a number one. I was absolutely gutted.
You see, this cracked me up because Chris talked on a recent podcast on the After Parties one that we were talking about. He touched upon an actual after party and he said that he had to actively go and apologise to his partner's sister. He didn't go into it in big detail, but because of how he had been at a drunk after party. And Chris, again, he's one of the nicest guys I've met. But the day he told me about that was just after the Jess Megan podcast. And we'd been travelling home from our club night, We Are Lizards. And I'd said to Chris had said he was very drunk. It was a night that he'd kicked Stu, and Stu had given him the silent treatment for the whole journey home. And Chris had after we'd dropped off Stu, he'd mentioned that Jess was coming on to talk about dinosaurs, and I'd said that I'd read an article recently that dinosaurs were feathered, and it was a mistake that they're not feathered and that they're these scaly things. And the way he looked down his nose at me, as drunk Chris, not as Chris, as Craig, which is Chris's drunk alter ego, the derision he threw me for thinking that T-Rex, for example, was feathered, which apparently it's not. It was such a joy to then hear Jess pick dinosaurs he hadn't heard of, because he took such a dinosaur high point or high horse of me, because I'm not that knowledgeable, and Chris knows a lot about dinosaurs. When they had an episode of their five
Chris
people
knows a lot about dinosaurs.
you know the classic conversation, and you must have had it off record and off menu. The classic conversation of who you would have a dinner party with. It's notorious on Hardcore Listening that Stu's fury that when Chris chose that, one of his choices was T-Rex.
stupid.
It was
stupid.
Anyone
it's
living or dead.
Not it is a fucking
Stu,
meal, mate.
No, hang on, Stu. It is real. To clarify, it is real, mate.
It can be real. Don't,
yeah. but yeah, the
it's real, but it's not practical at a meal.
No, not at a dinner party, lads. Again, the great
the
choice,
table would have
why,
to be so
what?
High.
Why
the table?
Your...
You'd have to have such a high table so the T-Rex could eat, and then you'd have to have really tall chairs for all the humans. Yeah. It's a fucking nightmare.
It's just to wind up, Stu. Stu had all his favourite musicians, basically, didn't you? You
listen,
got all highbrow.
Guys.
You had, like post, like, 80s post-punk lead singers.
Who did you have, Stu? Come on.
No. Listen, first of all, before you even say Stu, guys, this is why, from a hit podcast to... I didn't even fucking know what yours was until we did this one. Listen... You gotta stop striking out against each other. Me and Ed are backing each other up. We're not trolling each other, trying to upset each other every fucking episode.
That's all we do.
You're choosing a T-Rex just to I'll make fun of your diabetes, but that's by the by. As Stu will attest, it's make-believe. But look, the whole thing... Me and Ed are having a good time together, backing each other up. You two
until it comes to pudding.
Other. to be fair, when it comes to pudding,
I was going
to
say
absolutely,
pudding versus starters. I was going to say, but I completely understand Chris's point of view, because the first time I was asked five people that you would have at a dinner party, living or dead, I picked Trump, Boris Johnson, Nigel Farage, Katie Hopkins and...
Fucking hell, what?
No, bear with me. And Hitler, and I chose dead. So it's the classic gag of you're allowed to choose living or dead, and you're riling people up by saying, I will choose them all dead.
Okay.
But picking T-Rex was a wonderful stretch, but it happened similarly on... I mean, this isn't just my Distraction Pieces Network annual review of the Hardcore Listing podcast, but they recently had a top five superhero costumes, and one of the ones that Stu picked was Flash Gordon. It's just a T-shirt. It's just a T-shirt and jeans. He also picked Supernan.
Super Gran.
Super Gran. I don't know. Yeah.
Hold on. Is the podcast called Hardcore Listening?
Mm. Yeah.
Hardcore Listing.
I think that was yours pick, fucking, wasn't it? Hold on. Your podcast is about top fives, but you've called it Hardcore Listening.
Listing.
Hardcore Listing.
Doesn't let people know what it's about.
Jake, hardcore Listing.
It's a pun on fishing.
Listing. Again, give it its exactly. Thanks, thank you, Ed. Give it its due. It's a pun on hardcore fisting.
Please,
so,
James. It's a pun on fisting. It's very highbrow. Leave it alone.
Come on, James. Jesus.
I thought it was Hardcore Listening. Hardcore Listing does let you know what it is. I didn't get the pun.
It's as lowbrow as you thought. It's fine.
It's lower than the brow, mate.
Yeah. Originally, I thought you weren't getting listeners because the title didn't let you know what it was. It turns out it's because the pun is fucking disgusting. So, like, Jesus. Fine.
At this point, I'm looking at my notes, and my genuine note is to ask James if he's tried any new Ben and Jerry's flavours recently. So, I mean, I don't know where this podcast is going.
Can I say, Ben and Jerry's are releasing a Nike SB Dunk shoe in the next month, and I want it so much more than I've ever wanted
to. I've seen it.
It's fucking
chunky
incredible.
Dunky.
It looks so dope. You cannot understand, or James will understand, because we've talked privately about Ben and Jerry's a lot, how the flash of panic I had when you posted a recent picture that made me think that Ben and Jerry's had done a collaboration with Off Menu.
Sure.
Because you did an artwork, and I was like, I've been pushing for a Distraction Pieces collaboration for so long. I was furious. Genuinely, on that subject, James, have you tried the Netflix and Chilled Ben and Jerry's?
No, not yet.
It's a collaboration with Netflix. It sounds mind-blowing. It sounds stupid. It sounds like a cash-in. It's the best Ben and Jerry's I've ever had in my life. It's fucking amazing.
Talk me through it.
So
he means that.
It's combining the basic combination. It's peanut butter and it's chocolate.
Yeah, yes.
That's gold. That's Ben and Jerry's gold. But what
they got me through the door.
But what they add is mashed up pretzels.
Yes.
So there's this kind of sprinkling of this salty flavour that is just, it's mind-blowing. It's so simple, but it's become my favourite flavour.
It sounds like the Chubby Hubby. So Chubby Hubby's famously been my favourite flavour. I say famously. I've said it so many times that to me it's famous, but like Chubby Hubby's like my favourite flavour.
It's only available in the UK. I was going to say, it's only available outside of the UK. I mean, we're going on deep dives here. This is just me and James. Everyone else, take your toilet break. Enjoy yourselves.
I'm happy for that.
It's available only outside of the UK.
I mean, Ed's moving away, but I know that Ed loves this. But like,
I've heard about Chubby Hubby many times.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. To be fair, Ed has heard about this enough times in his life. But like, it sounds like it's like Chubby Hubby, but without the potato chips involved, the crisps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's but also the pretzels aren't whole, they're crumbled up and sprinkled throughout.
Sorry, James, I don't know what Chubby Hubby is. Can you explain what...
So Chubby Hubby is like a malted vanilla flavour with a dark chocolate swirl, a fudge, a peanut butter fudge chunk throughout it, and a dark chocolate covered pretzel in it as well. Is that right, Pip? Am I right there, or have I got it wrong?
That's
basically what a Chubby Hubby is. I had it in Melbourne for the first time, and I think that ice cream, the thing is with ice cream is that you have a guilt that you're eating something that's bad for you. And ice cream has to be so good that it overrides that guilt. And the first time I had chubby hubby, I didn't care if it was shaving years off my life. I didn't care what it was doing to me. It was so good that I wanted to keep eating more of it and finish the whole tub. Normally with an ice cream tub, I don't want to finish the whole thing because I'm worried that it will be bad for my health. It was so good, it was worth it. That was how good this tub of ice cream was.
Mate, it's true. I genuinely, I rarely buy a tub and don't finish the whole tub. And me and James have talked, I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Me, James and Ed have talked about doing a drunk cast where Ed gets drunk and me and James see who can eat the most of Ben and Jerry's. And James was very confident until I sent him a photo of the fact that I was the first ever person to get a Ben and Jerry's gold card. it's like a Nando's gold card, but I just get free scoops. And I don't
know how you've done that. I mean, I genuinely think that most of the time, I feel, I can win ice cream eating competitions. I did one with my friend Sean when I was a teenager, and I pounded him, and we were both ill afterwards, but it was fine. When you sent us your stats, I started to get worried that I'd run my mouth off.
I thought I was the first person to get one, and then I've used it at least 8 times since it went out of date, which makes me think, I mean, the shocked look on the people working the till makes me think I'm the only person who's ever been.
It was a test run. Just kind of go, it was clearly a test run, and they've never done it again.
I was with you confused. In Soho, wasn't I, when you pulled that out? And I was like, whoa, it's the first time I had any respect for you. I was like, oh my God, that's incredible.
I had any respect for you. What had he done by that point that hadn't got you any respect?
I genuinely, before lockdown, in fact, the transition into lockdown, I was filming a TV show in Canada. And as James will attest with Chubby Hubby, the excitement of going abroad is the Ben and Jerry's flavours that aren't available in the UK. And I'd mentioned Netflix and Chilled. The collaboration in America with Jimmy Fallon, the Tonight Dough, which is a peanut butter dough flavour with like a dark chocolate kind of stuff in it. It's mind blowing, and I genuinely I was filming the show, and I had a hotel, but it was a hotel that was an apartment because I'm a big deal. It meant that I went the first night and bought a tub. I had at least half a tub every night I was over there. It was a bad moment. Yeah. Thankfully, no point in the script did it come up that I was topless, because it would have been a real shame. But that's part of the excitement, right? And surely your trip to New York to do Off Menu, particularly a food-based podcast, that must have been swamped with James eating ice cream and Ed having to abstain because of diabetes.
I ate so much stuff, mate.
Ed is such a great person and is one of my favourite friends. And I can say that now I've had 1.5 bottles of wine. But like, if I ever had to go abroad, especially to America, for a food-based anything, and choose someone to go with me, I would choose Ed at the drop of a hat, because Ed is like the perfect person to go with for a food tour, because Ed grew up loving food, then had to think about what he could eat, what he couldn't eat, sculpt himself into a sexy old beast. And now, only eats what is worth it.
When you're with Ed,
you're eating the best stuff, and it's like what we were saying about like I can eat a whole tub of Chubby Hubby because I don't care what it does to me because it's that good. Ed knows that across all foods, so I can go around with Ed in America, let him just choose whatever we're eating.
That was a key thing for me when I worked that out, because I used to be like pretty big, and then I worked out I'm just eating everything and there's no point doing that. Like, working out that I like exercise as well, and enjoying exercise and then enjoying food, but enjoying good food, and going, I'm not going to eat that pile of chips, they look pretty rubbish, I'm not just going to fill myself up with that, I'm going to eat the best meat and the best chips and the best cheese.
People were here, I literally applauded then. I've recently had this breakthrough with my partner, because I've highlighted that there's been points that I, and pre-lockdown, that I've left the house
and I've gone to five different shops to get ice cream, and I've come back with no ice cream. All of those shops had ice cream. They just didn't have the ice cream I wanted. Yeah. And that was all that was worth going down that rabbit hole for. Chris will contest to this from the time that we went to the cinema.
I've upset you. I've upset you by buying you ice cream before, haven't I?
Go ahead, Chris. Chris, at the cinema, Chris treated me to ice cream. Tell the story if you'd like.
You couldn't enjoy the movie because I've got the
wrong ice
cream.
What was it at the cinema you got?
What did you do, Chris?
I can't remember. What he wanted?
He didn't ask what I wanted,
and essentially...
And I got it in the wrong order,
well, what the fuck are you doing then?
Didn't I put it in the wrong order?
Ask you what people want.
So I'm then eating ice cream just to fucking eat ice cream. Not because it's the ice cream I crave and adore. But again, it was genuinely one of the most awkward moments in our friendship, because Chris hadn't said he was going to get ice cream. He was getting some stuff for himself, and he thought, Pip loves ice cream, I will treat my dear friend to some ice cream, and he presented to me, and the look that I gave him, and the cold, emotionless way I ate the ice cream was... fucking horrendous, and I feel guilty for it to this day, but I stand by it.
I think you must be mistaken.
I wasn't watching you eat it, I was watching the film.
You were!
If you thought that's what I was doing.
Listen.
We were watching Kong Skull Island, and you could not pay attention to that massive monkey.
Right, so Pip, your attitude to food does not stretch to your attitude to cinema, clearly.
Yeah. Kong Skull Island is a pile of shit. Look, I hereby absolve you of all guilt, Pip, because I understand that if someone buys you ice cream, you want it to be worth the guilt.
Yeah,
and if someone bought me ice cream before the cinema, especially before the cinema, well, I'm going to go and do something that will bring me kind of like, even if it's a shit film like Skull Island, it will bring me like, you know, kind of like...
A quick caveat. It was Skull Island in 4D.
So, okay, worse then.
Worse.
So, four
times as bad.
So, but whatever it is, that Skull Island in 4D will make you feel like a KFC will. So it's like junk food, and afterwards you feel bad about yourself. During it, I want to eat something that makes me feel good and like it was worth it. What I don't want is for someone to hand me cookie dough, you know, like Ben and Jerry's cookie dough and like chocolate fudge stuff, like stuff that you could get in the shops and fish food that like I know is pointless. Whereas really, when I go to the cinema, what I want is Chunky Monkey. I want the cinnamon bundo. I want I definitely want the Bob Marley flavour. Yeah. Like I want stuff that you can't get in a tub in the cinema.
Maybe cookie dough mix up. What the hell? Yeah,
maybe, sure.
See,
maybe.
You see, again, Stu, shut the fuck up. James,
I know where this is going, Pip. I know why Chris done it.
No, but I'm not even...
I want to hear what was my plan.
Because of his bullshit routine with the girl behind the counter every time he goes.
Also, he gets weird because when you go to the counter, you act like you don't know what you want.
Why?
Because you want it put in a certain order.
Those who don't know, so for Ed and James, I have specific flavours I like at the cinema and I have a specific order, but I'm an introvert in the job of an extrovert. So I'm really uncomfortable saying, here's what I want, here's the order I want. So what I do is I pick the first flavour and then I pretend I'm thinking about it. So they have time to put that flavour, because I don't want to tell them the three flavours I want and then put them
in
the wrong order.
You told us this on the first episode of Off Menu. I remember this.
It's all the correct order. So that was what Chris was playing with. But James, the reason this came up is exactly as you said. My local co-op, like, I've had a problem in this lockdown. I planned to be healthy, to work out a lot, but my local co-op deviated from a fudge brownie, a cookie dough and caramel choo-choo, which are the three standard flavours. Every Ben and Jerry's fan will know they're the three standard flavours. Yeah. They had Netflix and chilled, which is an obscure flavour. They had it regularly. I'm convinced I bought every tub, because I would go back every time that the lockdown would allow me.
Do you live on the Sunset Strip?
Oh, that's the heartbreaking thing. I've gone back three times recently and they've not had it. So it was clearly just me buying it, and I've got through their whole supply. But yeah, it's the best flavour. It's a rare flavour, and it's not the typical standard three that most shops have. small shops.
What the fuck? I don't know how you've even got that. Like, I've actively gone out to try, stop listening for like the last two minutes.
This is just for me and James.
We're still talking about ice cream.
Exciting stuff we've talked about.
I'm so sorry.
What the fuck is the matter with you?
Oh, God.
So me and James will know that the three standard flavours that everyone, every small shop sells is fudge brownie, cookie dough and caramel choo-choo.
You found your new cinema partner, mate. That's what I can say, because this is killing me, this conversation.
I don't think James is going to go and see Kong Skull Island.
I mean, it's worth noting. Go on, James.
If anyone was going to... Look, I would go and see Kong Skull Island. If someone's going to buy me some substandard Ben & Jerry's, I'd go.
it's worth noting that the thing that made me and Brett Goldstein bond was we had a meeting about a project in central London, and then we both said, oh, what are you doing after this? He said, I'm going to see a film. I said, so am I. And we went to see different films in the same cinema just so we could be on our own. Despite that's what we were doing next. I'm a fan of solo cinema, so that's what connected me and Brett.
That so much sums up Brett Goldstein.
Totally.
That the thing that brings him closer to someone is being apart from him. It's like that is 100% who he is. It's like he wants you to both just go, I love you, and now I'm going to go in the opposite direction. That's all he wants.
Brett's one of my favourite people in the world. Brett is someone who I will go and see. I go and see films in London. Like this, that's what I'm missing the most at the moment, is being in town for meetings or anything like that, and then having like 3 hours to kill until the next thing. There's no point to go home, so you're going to go and
see
it.
It was my favourite thing of having a show on XFM. Was XFM is surrounded by cinemas. Yeah. So I would have these periods where I have these big gaps. Every time I recorded a show on XFM, I would see a film.
It's and just being able to go to a film by yourself, and then every time I see a film, I will text Brett and tell him what film I've seen. Mm-hmm. And because I'll wander into films in the curzon, like art films, and invariably absolutely hate them. And immediately have to text him saying why I hated them and why I know he loved it, even though I know it's a piece of shit. And it's that fucking film Climax made me so angry, and I had to call him.
Ed, I've not seen it. Can you explain it to me?
Ed, it was in my films of the year.
It's
so
one
go
of the
ahead.
Worst films I've ever seen, Pip.
Can you both individually explain them to me separately?
Three,
and
two,
what you think
one. So what I love about Climax was
what Pip loves about Climax and why he's wrong. It's a Gaspar Noé film. It's fucking awful. The first half an hour is boring French teens doing a monologue to the camera. I went for two pisses during that. And then there's a really long dance scene, which is fine. And then it goes horrible for no reason.
Ed, I genuinely hope that we watched Climax in the same screening.
We may well
have done. The thing I love about Gaspar Noé films, and I've said this numerous times, it's so pretentious. I always catch them in the cinema because when the film finishes, everyone leaves in absolute silence. Because everyone, you know, you need a while to be able to talk about that, and I adore it. But yeah, it was probably my film of that year.
It can't have been the same screening, though, because I left in an audible huff.
I love it. I love it. Well, I mean, the thing, you know, we're now over 3 hours in, and the thing that I wanted to bring up, it relates to off a menu, because you mentioned missing going to see films, and I miss that massively. I genuinely, as a joke, and I'm doing quotation marks with my fingers here, as a joke, I tweeted Cineworld saying, how much is a projectionist paid per hour? Because all the cinemas are closed, I've got a Cineworld near me, I'm willing to pay them to let me in to watch a film on a big screen with no one else there. It was a joke, but it was also completely real. I would be so up for that. It'd be amazing. But you obviously both do a food podcast. And one of the things I've found in this lockdown is the food that I miss. So essentially it's food that's outside of my delivery range. And obviously you had me on off menu and know that my off menu menu was essentially all available from Pizza Hut.
You've got a lot of your food within range, I'd say.
Well, interestingly, Pizza Hut is out of my delivery range. And genuinely, this is a confession I've not told anyone, but Papa John's is out of my delivery range, but it's in my mum's delivery range. So yesterday, I drove to my mum's, chatted to her through my window, and had a Papa John's delivered to hers.
But that is
so
great.
That I could bring it...
That's lovely. So that you're sticking to the rules and you're doing what you want. It's great.
Did you do that under the guise of having a catch-up with her?
No, I told her. Actually... I rang my mum and she was in the middle of a Zoom Pictionary contest. So she said, I can't really talk. I'm playing Pictionary. I said, well, to be brief, I've got a delivery coming to your house. I'll be there shortly. Thankfully, it arrived after a Pictionary had finished, and I had that. But genuinely, the question I've got for each of you, including James, whose screen has gone completely blank,
but he's
so I've
there.
No idea if he
I know
can
he's
hear
there
us.
In the dark.
He's there.
There
I can
is.
See him moving.
Yeah.
But each of you, I'll start with maybe Stu, and then go Ed, then Chris, and then James. If James has stopped his mid podcast wank, so is. Both Ed and James are both big foodies. And because of that, they're like a listening to off menu, there's so regularly discussions you have that make me regret not living in London. Because there's food places that you go to and adore, and it's amazing. What are you looking forward to going and eating that has been removed from your grasps in lockdown? So, Stu, do you want to start with that, or shall I go to one of the... people who have a food podcast.
Yeah, start. Come back to me. Yeah, come back to me.
Chris, have you got anything?
Let's let Ed start, and then I'll cook something up.
Have you got anything, or would you like me to start? If you want more time to think.
No, I mean I've got it's literally it's everything. Like I fucking like I really miss ramen, like proper ramen. Like I really, mm-hmm. I think Bone Daddy's or Tonkotsu or something like that is one of the first places I'd go. I miss Vietnamese food. It's basically everything I can't cook myself. So Vietnamese food.
Are you
food.
Guys a fan of flesh and buns?
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah. I love flesh and buns, but it's the same.
It's fucking
so
it's
all,
fucking amazing,
all
right?
of those Bone Daddy's restaurants. So Bone Daddy's, flesh and buns, at Shack Fu Yu, which is a restaurant we bring up, I think, every episode of the
you
podcast.
You talk about it all the time. I've never been there. It's
Shack Fu Yu
now.
Is like, I can't go to Shack Fu Yu now. Without, and I like this, by the way, but I can't go to Shack for you without someone being there who was there because of the podcast.
Have you?
So it's so.
Have
so
you guys
nice.
Had DJ Yoda on the podcast?
We've not. No.
No.
He's a foodie and a hip hop head. He took me to Flesh and Buns for the first time, and it blew my mind. He's amazing. I recommend having him on. But
we'd love to have him on.
There's so many restaurants of that level in London where they're like it's a night out and it is a treat. But it's not like you're not spending hundreds of pounds, but it's like a decent level of like amazing food, and you get loads of small dishes. Like it's fucking incredible places.
That's it with those kind of places that you get small plates.
Yeah,
and it's mind blowing. Me and when I toured with B Dolan, we realised that you can turn any restaurant into a tapas restaurant. If you only order starters,
yeah,
and starters, I'm a dessert guy.
Starters are bullshit
like James.
For one.
I mean, I'm a dessert guy like James. But if you order a range of starters as your main, it's a hell of a ride. So,
but there's so many.
I know it sounds like I'm playing you both off each other here.
But there's
trying to be the ideal off menu guest.
There's so many restaurants where it's not even starters; it's just all of the dishes are small. So, fuck it. We went to an amazing restaurant after an off-menu recording once called Brat in Shoreditch, which is just incredible. Yes. It's like small dishes, amazing grilled meats, and mate, there's so many places I can't wait to go.
I went to a place in Shoreditch before our club night. I went on my own because I was embarrassed, but before the club night that I do with Stu and Chris, but I was too embarrassed to say I'm going to this, purely because. They do deep fried Oreos, and that blew my mind. So I went there. It was a barbecue place. It was amazing. But I went on my own, ordered all this stuff, had deep fried Oreos, and it was heaven. My choice. I'll go to Stu next if you've thought of anything. But I follow. I don't even follow that many, but they come up on my recommends a lot of burger places. And burger places are something that aren't readily available where I am on. Just Eats or whatever a delivery app. So I've had my fill of pizzas and variation. I like some good Italian pizzas and variations, but just a good burger. And this is in keeping with my off-menu appearance, but a chain like a Shake Shack or Five Guys or any of these that I don't have access to, just I keep seeing it, and it's just so simple and appealing. And I know that when I eat it, it's not going to be a life-changing experience, but
it's comfort.
I want it so bad.
It's comfort. Like that's what we need now is comfort. And apparently, you're not in London, but Shake Shack is starting to deliver in London next week, I think.
Mate, I mean, speaking of comfort, I text a few people recently. I stay up for most UFC events, and we won't go into it because I know that you guys aren't particularly into it. I will touch upon the fact that
we watched a UFC fight when we were in America.
And how was that
trip? Well, all we could think about was you, because you're the only person we know that watches it a lot. And there was a shot where a guy was like holding back another guy. This guy's really pushing on him, and he's like holding him back, and his fucking ankle at one point like just fucking snaps, and you see that the fact that it's gone further than it should do. And I remember we were in a bar in I think LA.
It was LA,
and we saw it happen, and all I could think was, "This is what Pip likes."
I've got to touch upon the fact that there was the first UFC event in months last night, and the prelims started at 1 p.m. and Stu was waiting for the prelims. There's these prelim fights that start at 11:30, and I was watching them, but Stu couldn't watch them. And Stu was texting me up until 12:59, and then he fell asleep. He was literally texting me. He was literally texting me till 12:59, going, "I just want to watch fights. I'm so up for this." And then he fell asleep. And the message I sent him was read at 6:48. The fight's finished at 6:30. And I was just, mate, I was in heaven at reading those notifications. But yeah, last night.
How did the two of you meet, you and Stu?
Oh, I've gone to Stu's club night for years. And Stu was annoyed that in my first interview with Mixed Mag magazine, I talked about how I used to go to his club night, but I rarely paid to get in because I was poor. So one of my group of mates had paid to get in and then go and open the fire exit, and the rest of us had sneak in. He was heartbroken that was the big mention of his club night he's been doing for 20 years or whatever.
But did you bollock Pip for it? How did you become friends?
You booked us, Stu.
Has this already been covered in another podcast and stuff?
Well, Stu, you booked me on... when me and Dan were touring, you booked me and Dan to play in Southend.
Yeah.
And we kind of hit it off from then. And to give Stu his due, he was in bands that were the big local bands as I was growing up. Again, he's very old. The big local bands as I was growing up. So I kind of looked up to him and his group of friends as the cool guys, the guys in bands who were doing it and making it. So
what did you play, Stu? Bearing in mind, for me... this is like, I met Stu for the first time this week over Zoom, doing an interview for the Off the Beaten Track podcast. And now, by this point, I'm drunk and obsessed with Stu. So like,
and what a pleasure it was to watch that happen, by the way. And it was almost immediate as well in this chat. Like, every time Stu said something, I could see James being like, I love Stu.
Yeah, because, It's very different. Like, the way that Stu's treated compared to the way that Chris is treated is very different. And I want to get in on...
Very discriminatory.
Chris is just getting out of things. Like, Chris has got the tiger who came for tea in the background of his Zoom picture. Chris has just got a plain brick wall. Stu has just got a plain brick wall. Stu is getting way more shit than Chris is getting. And Stu has got nothing. Stu's got a brick wall, that's it. Chris has got the tiger who came to tea.
And bet.
Well,
bear in mind,
I wouldn't even know who.
Can I just say shout out to Chris for color coding his books?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's bullshit.
So I know that's your girlfriend. That's a pile of shit. I live with a girlfriend.
So that's stupid. So Colour-coded books is a pile of shit.
Right, that leads me on to what I want to ask you.
A blue skull next to a tiger who came to tea is a pile of shit. And that Stu is getting all the bullshit from everybody. This is what I'm so behind Stu, because I had a nice chat with Stu earlier on this week. It was a lovely chat about music. Chris, you're probably a lovely guy, but I literally don't give a shit.
James,
you've got
to pick a side. You've got to pick a side, mate. That's fine.
Oh, I'm picking a side.
That's fine.
I'm picking a side 100%. If I'm doing my top five people, it's Stu, 1 to 5. And Chris is getting nowhere near that.
James, what's on the back of your wall? It looks like a fucking hula hoop. That's you're ripping me for the tiger that came to tea. And yes, you've just got like an ancient hula hoop.
It is a hula hoop.
Can I nerd out here? And it's always awkward when you're a fan of people that you're friends with, but James hula hooping on Taskmaster was was just a mind-blowing moment, a career high, and just, yeah, is the hula hoop related to your mind-blowing hula hooping skills on Taskmaster?
That is, yeah, it is my Taskmaster hula hoop that they gave me. Yeah. Obviously, like you and like everyone else, or Ed, or everyone, like, I've been a fan of Taskmaster for many years. I was delighted to be on it. I was very excited to be on it. And they gave me the hula hoop. And it was definitely the moment during the recording where I felt the most like I had bottomed out and failed. And it was nice when I moved into this flat to get the hula hoop on the wall. Actually, to be fair, by the time... So the week that we filmed the Taskmaster studio tasks was the week that I moved into this flat. So, like, day one of Taskmaster in the studio was day one of me moving in here. And I was quite stressed out and moving in and filming that at the same time. And one of the things that I had to do during that week was do the hula hooping task in the studio, which I failed at. And the first thing I did when I got home from that failure was to nail... And it's really bad because it's going to fall apart and probably do damage to my wall. But I just nailed 2 nails into the wall randomly. and then I hung the hula hoop onto it.
I mean,
so the hula hoop is on the wall. It's there. One of the nails keeps on sinking and it's basically carving a line into my wall.
Or the painting by, I can't remember his name, who's on the wall behind me, Chris came round and helped me hang, and it took far longer than we expected because of the exact same thing. Every time we screwed in, it just sunk into the wall and then was a mess. But to give a little behind the scenes, I'm the biggest fan of Taskmaster, and I had Alex Horn on the podcast, and because of that, I have people tweeting regularly asking when I'm going to be on. The fact is, I'm not a comedian. I'm never going to be on. I shouldn't be on. But the heartbreaking thing is I was arriving at Fenchurch Street train station one day to go and record a podcast with historian and great thinker Rutger Bregman. Honestly, I believe one of the people who will be one of the great thinkers of our time. Mm-hmm. And I almost cancelled it because I got a text off James saying, can you come and pretend to be Father Christmas for a task I'm doing on Taskmaster?
Yeah.
I turned it down because of my passion for Rutger Bregman and this podcast, but you ended up going with Richard Osmond, who hasn't even got a beard.
No, I didn't end up going with that. I ended up going with a member of the crew who did not have a beard. So, like, Richard Osmond delivered the letter, fine.
Right, that was it, of course, yeah.
But Father Christmas was either you or Daniel Kitson, and neither of you replied, and so therefore a beardless member of the crew had to be Father Christmas.
Have you got a section on your phone that's people who've got stutters?
No, but
I'll hit them up for the Father Christmas role.
That's very unfair. He has a section on his phone called Beardy Stutters.
Yeah.
The two of you.
It's a silent character. It's their moment. They can't fuck it up. There's no dialogue. They can do this.
Yeah. This is how woke I am, is that I don't see stutters. I only see beards.
Mate, no one sees stutters.
You, so you and... Yeah, well, yeah. You and Kitson are, like, massive Taskmaster fans. And so I thought that well, that's a, it's an open goal. They'll definitely do it. And also, like, I knew that it was going to be in the background, so...
I mean, what the fuck was Kitson doing? I was importing a, yeah. I was recording a very important podcast. What the fuck was Kitson's excuse?
Kitson was upholding his frankly ridiculous, like sense of dignity, where he thinks that just because he doesn't go on Taskmaster, that means no one's going to know who he is. Like, if he went on Taskmaster as the Santa Claus, no, actually, no. To be fair to him, Kitson was at his mum's birthday. I'll let him off.
And this is now.
I've just remembered he was at his mum's birthday in Yorkshire.
That is fair. That is fair on him, to be honest.
And this is now
completely 100% fair.
The thing is, the guy's got so many morals. He tries so.
Oh no! He was at his mum's birthday. This is now that James. I've been doing this podcast for over 5 years, and this is the hardest question I've ever asked, and I want a true answer.
Who did you
text first, me or Kitson?
Oh, that's a good question. And I can say, look, even though my memory's foggy at this point, definitely Kitson. I mean, I wouldn't message you, but I mean, why were the fuck?
I love Taskmaster. It's the best show on TV.
To be honest, I don't know who it was first. Like, but at the time, it was definitely that I knew that both of you loved it and that both of you in the background, because I knew that... In the background as Santa, it would be funny to have either, you know, just someone who people knew, but he wasn't acknowledged. So, like...
Love it.
Either way, either one of you would have been great. I think that at one time, like, this is 100% honest, at one point I thought that... I think I was trying to go for one of you as Father Christmas and one of you as the postman so that I had both of you at the same time. So, like, that was the...
Amazing.
The dream was it was going to be that.
But let me be clear
to Richard Osman listening. You were the last option.
But did you offer us both the role of Father Christmas and you were going to have the challenging task of let us know that one of us was in the background?
You've not been acting long. Don't start quibbling over roles. You just take what you're offered, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. For starters, yeah, well done for panelling up with Stephen Graham, but you're not an actor. Like, I think I said to both of you, are you free this afternoon? Because I'm doing a thing for Taskmaster. It'd be cool for you. So I don't think I had in mind, like, when
specific
you're doing
roles.
When you're doing one of those tasks, you've got an hour to sort this out. Like, you just text the people that you would like the most for something and say, can you do it?
I'm so glad I couldn't do it and didn't have to text you my agent's details.
I don't know. Like,
can you send me some details of the role, the basic, the background?
I don't know. If you and Kitson had said yes, I would have, in a drop of a hat, had two Father Christmases. I wouldn't have even given it a moment's thought and had Richard Osman as the postman. Like, it would have been funny to have two Santas. Like, the great thing about that show is that in the moment, whatever you do, you just have to say yes to it and build on it. So, like, it would have been great to have both of you involved.
Also,
and, like,
they say yes to almost everything. Yeah. So if you say, I want to do this, they go, okay, we'll try and make that happen. Like, they will then try and make it happen.
Are you talking about Taskmaster or me and Kitson?
You and Kitson are both people who say no. So, like, we're not... Taskmaster is say yes, and you and Kitson say no. But, like,
you see, it's funny because I touched upon earlier about people that people recommend me. Kitson is the person I've been recommended the most, and that I've tried to see... Or, again, I've tried to see him the most, and every time... I won't go into detail, but there have been weird things that have got in the way... I've not seen him, and for everything I hear, he's the most amazing. Yeah, he's
not,
a legend.
But like,
I always find that's a terrible terrible way of going in to watch someone is being told they're the most amazing person.
Yeah,
sure. No matter what, when you get recommended an album where someone says it's the best album of all time, or this comedian's the best person of all time, or it's the best actor ever, it's never a good idea to then go in with that in your head.
I mean, it's what works so well with the Hardcore Listing podcast is all of the word is that it's absolute dog shit with just guesswork and an absolute mess that it's going to be all right when you have a listen. It's going to work out okay.
Everything broadly is fine.
And that's the big lesson here.
Can I ask Ed? that we was talking about, like, stuff that's in the background earlier, and just looking behind you, right? I take it that's your records, right?
Yeah, my records.
Right. So there's two questions. I want to know: are they in any order? And
no.
Also, there's and also there's a big shiny cup. What did you win that for?
So that is not right. Listen.
James, shut up. Shut up, James. Shut, James. James, shut up.
Yeah. No, don't worry. Shut up. Enough for you to tell me to shut up. But, like,
shut up,
James.
Well, do shut up, then.
That, he was... No, because I'm cool.
Do shut up.
But, like, okay, yeah.
All right. So the records are not in any order. I moved last year. I just dumped them all in those shelves. The cup is for Richard Osman's House of Games. Which is a game show where you you do five episodes. I won 4 out of 5 episodes, which at the time was unprecedented. Wow. And I got the record for episode.
Mate, great lockdown tip. It's really nice.
It's fairly
throwaway with all the respect in the world.
No,
and yeah, I've watched a lot of House of Games in this period.
James did it, and James won. And I saw him the night he won the whole series. And he wasn't in a nice mood, and he smashed his trophy to pieces in a tunnel. So
yes, listen, it's not a good fun fucking show where you can just switch off and have a bit of a laugh.
It is. It's a great show.
No, Ed, who are you on with?
Kate Thornton, Makita Oliver, and Adrian Edmondson.
How were that? Well,
great lineup.
Love Kate Thornton.
Yep.
Big part of, you know, watching TV in the last 10 years.
Lovely.
Makita Oliver, huge show for me,
awesome.
Pop world. Adrian Edmondson, I'd say literally one of
Legend.
My heroes. So
brilliant. Right. Okay, when I was on with Rory, the guy from Top Gear. I don't
prick.
Even remember his surname. He was a prick, but not as bad as most people were to me. And Diamond, who turned out to be King of the Bullies. And Samantha Janus, who is now Samantha Womack, who was like the sidekick to the bully. I had the worst day I've ever had on any TV recording ever. Got bullied by, but now I kind of love it that I was bullied by Anne Diamond, because I think that's it's pretty funny. It is funny, but that Anne Diamond bullied me, and Samantha Womack was behind her bullying me with her. I mean,
for some reason, no matter how many times you say Samantha Womack, I'm imagining Samantha Mumba. That's nice.
Mumba wasn't on, mate. It was Womack all day.
Yeah. If Samantha Mumba was bullying me, it would have been nice and soft. Womack is, that's mean. That's like I mean, bearing in mind that most of us, me and Ed included, were first introduced to her when she was showering after a rugby match.
Up and under!
Up and under,
guys.
That's where we first.
Stu and Chris, have you done top five nude scenes
up
on your
and
podcast?
Under.
But,
oh my god!
To be fair, I completely got my just desserts, because that was where I first knew who Samantha Womack was in Up and Under, in the trailer. To be fair, where she was showering, it was like a back shot scene, and it was very. To be fair,
and front.
To be fair to me, huh?
And front.
And was it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't remember it being and the front. I remember it being the
yes,
back.
Yes, Neil Morrissey... And this is amazing I'm saying this. Neil Morrissey walked into the showers.
Okay.
And Mumba was facing away, then facing forwards. Not Mumba.
Chris.
But Mumba wasn't in it.
Hang on. Chris looks as lost as I am. I've just Googled Samantha Womack.
Chris should be
Game
worried,
on. Game on was my... I was
Eurovision.
Obsessed with her in Game
she,
On.
She was stunning. But Ed said, have we done top five, what, nude scenes?
Nude scenes,
and I've started writing mine already, but I think it'd probably be Erica Elnack under
Hang
siege.
Hang on, don't... Whoa,
jumping
whoa.
Out the cake.
Don't give it
what
away. You've just booked me. You've just
what,
booked me for
wild
the podcast,
things. Okay, wild things in there.
Let's do it.
You've got Ed for hardcore listening top five nude scenes. Coming soon.
Can I just make sure our Bugsy Showgirls, please?
what was Samantha Womack?
And I'm also Bugsy and Shane.
Has her name changed? Samantha Janus. That's how I know her.
I know her.
Samantha Janus. Good lord.
When I was 17, I was into Game On, and I watched Samantha Janus in Game On. So like that was
such
an amazing
series.
sitcom, and I loved it at the time. But to be fair to her, between that and me meeting her, I'd seen Up and Under, had my sexual awakening with that scene where my memory is that it's from the back. Ed remembers it from the front, which is like mind blowing to me because I only remember like a side boob thing. But like when I got slammed by Samantha Womack, I felt like I deserved it because I perved over all those years ago when I'd seen it. So, like, I felt like it's a
final retribution.
This. Well, I deserve this shit because I've been sitting there as a pervy little hormone-ridden 18-year-old watching Up and Under, and now I deserve this to be completely destroyed by you. She told me I was a stupid person with a stupid brain when I was on Richard Osman's House of Games. Her and Anne Diamond told me this is a stupid game for stupid person people with stupid brains. And then, I mean, sure, I still won, but I felt pretty destroyed by them both.
Ed, who did you mention earlier that was on a 90s girls'
Sorry,
hosted...
I'm just looking. I'm looking for the pictures. Carry on. What were
Ed,
you asking?
Ed,
who did
I'm
you mention earlier?
That... anecdotes here, and you're just Ed, looking at your phone.
Ed, who
I was
did
looking
you mention
for the
earlier that was on?
Because I was worried I'd imagine the front.
I know
shots.
What you're looking at.
Was she on The Word or something?
Sarah Kaywood.
Sarah Kaywood and Samantha Janus was just that was
Sarah Kaywood. You know that Sarah Kaywood
on the girly show.
Yeah, the girly show. That's it.
Do you know what? The more we talk about,
I genuinely, if you look at my phone, I'm holding it up to the screen now, and I've Googled the girl show.
Private Jesus browsing Christ. Enabled.
And obviously, Pip. It's come private. You notice private browsing is enabled.
Private browsing on your phone.
Yeah,
I've enabled private browsing while I Googled the girl show.
Show up, Pip. Figures, you're the classic person who I'd imagine is like very woke on one hand and therefore but absolutely grubby on the other.
Like genuinely
like completely
you're
the
so
grubbiest
right.
like Fagin like type porn. Like if Fagin was to look at pornography, you're him, and then but on the other side of things, you're like this kind of pure, like, very nice guy.
James, genuinely, you're so right. One of the reasons I started the podcast was because I had so many songs, like Letter from God to Man and Thou Shalt, that people had this opinion of me that was this saintly figure. I started the podcast to show them a more realistic figure of what a piece of shit I was.
Sure.
Woke Fagin. Amazing.
Just so I...
But I know who you are. You're John
just
the
so
Punk.
I could feel comfortable with their opinion of this fictional character that was Scroobius Pip.
When I was growing up, there was a guy in Kettering called John. And, like, I really connected to him. When I was 17, I latched onto this guy called John. It's probably around the same time I got into to like your music as well, to be fair to me, but like he was a guy who he was a vegan and he was almost like celibate at the time, but like he loved like certain music and certain genres and all this, and he was actually an extremely grubby guy who like completely dirty stuff, but like who at the same time respected like control and like being able to like you know, like resist certain things. So like when I met you and I started doing things with you, I thought, oh, this is John the Punk. This is like a guy who kind of to be like I don't mean this in any bad way, but like you recognize like this is all the things my body is telling me to do. And yet, at the same time, I know that my brain is telling me not to do them, and so I'm trying my best to split my life between the two of those things.
All right, R. Kelly, chill out. My mind is telling me no, but my body...
So basically, James, what you're saying is you think Pip is a perv who bought a book...
Yeah.
And the essence of R. Kelly. James is just...
100%.
On record, James has just described me as the Essex R. Kelly. This is just disgusting.
Yes. 100%. I think that Pip would like have sex with anyone who let him unless Twitter said it wasn't okay. So like, I think that that's the kind of like what who Pip is.
This is so meta because genuinely part of the start of the drunk cast was getting two mates who I chat to in real life drunk to talk to me on the podcast rather than just here I am talking to a philosopher. Here yeah. I am talking to a wonderful artist to kind of exactly that. I'd get tweets all the time from people saying when you say Chuck D, you talking about Charles Dickens, and I'd go, let's break that boundary, let's break that down, and go, no, I'm as much of a piece of shit as everyone out there. So, dear God, that was a that was an exposing moment from James.
People needed to hear that you weren't just this poet guy. That, you know, there's people out there who think you're just a prick.
Who could ever? Earlier on, when we were talking about like transitions from like rap music to proper rap music, like for me, I still hold them as like great albums. Is like your first album with Dan the Sack and your first solo album. I think are like exceptional albums, and I love them. But like, in order to be, I know but sounds bad, but like, in order to be a transitional album, you have to be a good album. You can't be like bad yeah. and be able to bridge that. You can't, because the bridge has to be strong, blah, blah, blah. But like those albums for me, like when Romish was interviewing me the other day, what came into my head I didn't say was you. So like,
yeah.
What I wanted to say was, like, actually, the first Dan the Sack versus Scroobius Pip album, like, Thou Shalt Always Kill. So, okay, here's a thing that my friend texted me about. David Trent, who Ed knows. Do you know David Trent?
I know David Pip. Trent.
No idea.
Like, if you don't know, right, Pip, you should get David Trent as a guest on your podcast.
Oh, you should. And just to link it back in, David Trent used to have a 10-minute routine involving a video of the guitarist from At The Drive-In.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Like, David Trent would both elevate and destroy you at the same time. Like, David Trent knows everything about the Earth and the universe. Yeah, but anyway. So, like, right, here's the point where I admit that I'm drunk. I've forgotten what I was talking about. I've honestly completely forgotten anything I was saying.
Mate, as you were saying that about albums and mine and Dan's first album and my solo album, instantly, Chris will know this, but on my first solo album that not many people heard originally, and no commercial breaks, I had a line that revealed me more as my real self, rather than the person that I became perceived as, I guess, in the media. Or in the public, let's not make the illusion I ever really attracted the attention of the media. But I had a line on that first album that said, and it's one of the lines I'm most ashamed of. It said, like Martin Luther King, I had a dream, but mine involved you and a tub of whipped cream. That's not only disrespecting the great Martin Luther King and his wonderful speech, but it's demeaning it down to the level of sexual whipped cream.
That is basicness. That's sub Dane Bowers.
But equally, yeah, as well as it being Dane
Bowers. I would watch Dane Bowers over you over that.
As basic as that, it's still clearly someone who had had very little sex and had read that getting whipped cream involved, that's a bit sexy.
And as we all know, it's an absolute nightmare.
Oh, it's a fucking nightmare. It's a mess. It's a clean-up job from hell. But again, it's clearly I'd heard this, but not actually experienced.
One person he knows that.
I'm going to be edgy and involved whipped cream in my Martin Luther King-based fantasy.
Have you ever used ice cream? Have you ever actually gone
no one's
and combined those?
Are you actually considering like...
haven't used that, Chris. Come on.
Pip and
Chris,
Jay,
are you thinking about the clean-up operation at the after party?
The clean-up operation would be an absolute nightmare.
Just from the conversation that we had earlier, you should be very aware that the amount of
rejection and isolation that any partner would feel if I brought ice cream into the mix would just be too heavy. I'd clearly just be, you're naked and being very sexy, and I'm going, oh, this Netflix and chilled is quite exceptional. It just wouldn't work. It wouldn't work.
Lads, but, I might need to go downstairs in a little bit if we want to.
Or let's wrap things up.
Head towards the wrap up.
Just before we do, Stu brought up the background of Ed with his vinyl. I was about to make a confession on my background off screen, and I felt self-conscious until I saw Chris's. And my DVD collection is colour coordinated. So it goes from blue into white, and then, from blue into orange into red into white, then white into black, and so on and so forth. And your background, Chris, seems to be colour coordinated rather than alphabetized or anything else. So, what's the deal there?
It's all my missus's literature degree books. So, amazing. Yeah, I have no. All I can bring to it is my book collection is just below it, basically, which is just that kind of bizarre magazine.
For those tuning in, he's brought a bizarre magazine now. So
it's a classy choice.
It's astounding. So, did we ever get to what you guys, where you guys would like to eat if you could eat? Or the first place you want to eat after? Ed said absolutely anywhere. Stu and Chris.
I just want some mezze.
Mezze, fancy.
Mezze?
Vegan and specific. Over to you, Chris.
I was an ex-Nando's addict as a child.
You were?
Yeah.
And I thought I had time to get one more Nando's in, and then they shut, and I was just devastated,
Chris,
by it. I could sit and try and say something else,
I don't want to keep Ed, because I know that Ed's got to get off, but like the thought of having lost Nando's and wanting to go to Nando's again is one of the only things that is difficult during
That's the last meal I had out. So it was my birthday. See, on March 10th I had a Nando's, but I was eating like super healthy and doing a pretty tight health regime to get in shape for my wedding. So I had fucking butterfly chicken breasts at Nando's.
No.
So now
that's my go-to
fucking
choice. That's my go-to choice.
Of course it is. You CrossFit wanker.
You fucking dickhead.
Of course it is.
Yeah,
mate. I was so close. To
chicken breasts.
Your whole life is doing the best things at the worst. Like the worst quality of the best things. Like
I was so close.
Shit.
I was so close to being the first to choose a protein shake as my drink on off menu. Thankfully,
we would have thrown you to the fucking walls like Joel Dommett thrown to. Like
no, Pip, you played mate, it so well because you picked all junk food. Yet you're clearly a CrossFit tosser.
It was the perfect first episode. Was like 100%. Someone who just picked junk food.
I
don't think we would have as good a podcast now. And I don't want to say this because I don't want him to kind of like get in on this shit because we've actually lucked out. But like, if Pip hadn't chosen a junk food, you know, dumb guy's first menu.
Excuse me?
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
You're a dumb
sorry, I misheard that, but go ahead.
No, but like, if you hadn't chosen, like, what was such an, like, for all of us, like,
a basic bitch menu.
Ed,
a basic
but, like,
bitch menu.
But for all of us, like, for me, it was like my menu, and for Ed, and like for everybody, it was like the menu that we all related to and liked. Like, the fact that was the first menu that went out was that one that everybody, no matter who they are, would like.
Totally.
Was very lucky for us, because, like, I liked everything on your menu. I think I did.
It.
I think like, sure. But like, it was like, oh, I wouldn't have chosen it as first choice. You're fucking insane. That's your first choice. the fact that's what you want the most is fucking batshit. But like,
right? You see, my off menu is more like a what do you fancy this evening menu?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, but that's great. That's great.
But that's what we were lucky for.
But if
we had anyone who had said their first choice, we might not have done well.
But
at
even
all.
Even like the next episode, which was great as well, was Grace Dent, and it was all there was like some like chips,
a proper food critic,
some proper fancy shit as well.
Yeah,
but I think we needed you as the first episode to shore it up.
Because what Chris has highlighted here is people. What Chris has highlighted is people's obsession with Nando's. Because Chris has messaged my partner saying how much I hate Nando's, and it's not true. I'm just impartial. I think it's fine.
But go the to opinion, hell. You, but go the, to hell the, and burn
exactly,
forever.
Exactly. The opinion that Nando's is fine.
What the fuck is the matter with you?
Is interpreted as a scathing attack on the art form that is Nando's. About, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's
because fine. You're not no, right, you're not no. touring anymore.
That's, because I'm having the butterfly
anymore.
Chicken.
You're attacking the
like
middle
Joel
of life.
Dommett and drinking my own protein shake.
No, Joel Dommett loves it. Joel Dommett would drink a liquefied Nando's chicken in a heartbeat.
Because you, Joel Dommett is touring. We're all touring comedians. It's regularity. It's a standard across the country. And the standard is good. And the standard is spicy. And I love it. And do they pause black cards? And what's going on over there?
You've got a black card, Ed, and I haven't. Here's the thing that is like a massive... It's not actually like...
Black cards don't exist. It's a myth.
We haven't got an issue about it. But like... Ed has a black card and I do not have a black card, which is,
you know,
like
what?
Ed has tried to get me one, but they haven't
you know what,
me one.
I'm gonna end the podcast on a very deep and meaningful note, and I'm gonna compare Ed and James. James, first of all, how has lockdown been without social media? Because I think it's a key difference. I think it's a key difference. Yeah. I think the depression, the darkness, the misery, the anger at other humans is fueled so much by social media. So to have two people so connected but in such different situations, how's it been, James?
Well, first of all, like what I'll say beforehand is that Ed is a much more balanced person than I am. And so therefore, whatever he has to say about social media is probably fine. And... for me personally, I got knocked pretty badly by social media, and I came off of it like probably 6 months or so before the lockdown. And I would say since I've come off of it, life has been better. I don't miss it in any way, shape or form. I can only imagine how bad it would be during lockdown to have social media present in my life, and it's fantastic. What my... now fear is that Ed, who is a perfectly balanced human who is fine, will be like lockdown or life before lockdown was fine, and after lockdown it's also been fine. But
mate,
like
mate,
for me it's been bad and then good and then better.
Before we hand over to Ed, next week's guest on my podcast is the return of Rutger Bregman, who's a historian and philosopher.
And
the reason you've never been on Taskmaster.
Yeah, he's never been on Taskmaster. Absolute fact. But his whole outlook is the fact that humans are by their very nature good, but we act bad because of what we're shown and what is put to us. So my instant thought was social media shows us the worst of humans and therefore brings out the worst in humans. It shows us people breaking lockdown and therefore makes us go, well, why should I be on lockdown if these are literally 20 idiots versus millions or thousands in a particular area? So say it's 100 in an area, but there's thousands that are obeying the lockdown. Social media highlights that minority and makes it harder for the rest to adhere and be sane in these times. So, Ed, over to you.
Okay, so I see all of this.
Follow that, Ed.
And I can see on social media these idiots you're talking about, but it doesn't make me think these people aren't obeying it, so why should I? It makes me think I'm going to, like, triple obey it, and I'll be better than all of these pricks. I'm fine. Like, social media is fine. I just, like, I mute a lot. Like, it's been great.
No,
with...
hold on a second, though. Because, like, I agree with that you do mute a lot of people, but you get annoyed with a lot of people at the same time.
Yeah, but I don't get annoyed at them. I'll just text you.
Sure.
Yeah, but that's the same thing.
No, it's not at all. Because surely... if you're getting annoyed at them, directly to them, then they know they're getting a response. And
yeah, but
not
I don't reply to them. But, like,
yeah, but
you and me both hate them.
You get super angry, though.
I think we're the same, but like, I think we're the same, but that you, we both respond to them in a way that is equally healthy.
But like, I get rid of it from my head in about 10 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, but so do I. But like, we do it in different ways.
My thought on this, or looking at this Zoom call, is that there's two ways to positively react. One is to remove yourself from social media completely, James. Two is to find the positives and the motivation in the negatives. And that is looking at Ed, whose traps are looking pretty solid right now. He's looking in good shape. He's leaning in a particular manner that looks like he's been motivated by the idiots on social media to actually push himself further to be the best Ed Gamble he can possibly be. So surely both of you are approaching it in the best way.
But then
I look at Stu, who is struggling with a headstand, fucking looking old as fuck. He's got bricks in his background.
But this is the problem, right? Is that we look at people like Stu and try and beat the fuck out of them, which he doesn't deserve. Because actually, Stu is out of all of us, if we're honest, like the five of us on this call, we're all thinking Stu is actually the best. Stu has got his life sorted.
I want to have my own bar. I want a grey beard and I want a nice jumper. Yeah.
But to be fair, Stu is
5 yards away from that bar as well.
Stu is what we aspire to purely because we can clearly see he's far older than us.
No, it's not even because of that. It's because, like, we all, as British people, as English people, we can have a go at the person whose goal is the closest, right? So Stu's goal is, like, have a good family, be happy, like yourself, and like the people around you. And so we all kind of, like, have a go at Stu. But whereas the rest of us are individual loners who hate ourselves and I really wish that the people around us loved us as much as people around Stu hate love him, not hate. But like, Stu.
Freudian slip.
Stu.
Suck it,
in all
Stu.
Honesty,
everyone hates you.
All four of us hate you, Stu.
Oh, no, like, mate.
But we only hate you because you've got a happier life than the rest of us. So the four of us hate Stu. We wish that everyone loved us as much as the people in Stu's life love Stu. And that's the way we are now, right? So, like, I don't even know. I've spoken to Pip a bunch of times. I don't even know what his relationship status is. I doubt that it's relevant. Like, Ed's got a fiance, and I know that they're going to be together forever. I know that that's legitimately great, but I know that Ed hates himself, like, as a subtext of that.
That's how we're friends, is that James knows I'm happy, but also I hate myself.
Yeah, but I know that Ed's going to be fine for the rest of his life because Charlie is amazing, and that whole life is great. And Chris, to be honest, his drink was shit. The tiger who made for tea, he came for tea, is in the background. I know that Chris, in general, is probably going to have an awful life. So, like, Chris, I don't have any hope for whatsoever.
I love it. Genuinely, this is now the revelation of how I'm a soppy drunk rather than an aggressive drunk. Which is probably why I don't drink, because I like to be more aggressive and edgy than I actually am. I can look through now and see Stu, as the way he's handled this lockdown is he's produced more content, he's produced top fives of music, he's been more motivated than ever. I can look at James possibly as my ultimate goal. The fact that he's the fact that he's walked away from social media, I would love to. I fucking despise social media, and I would love to walk away from it. I can look at Chris, who in this weird, fucking crazy situation has made his personal life and his relationship stronger than ever, and that's something that That's an area I've always been great at focusing on my professional life rather than my personal life. To look at Chris and go, it's stronger than ever, it's pushing harder than ever, is hugely motivational. And then to look at Ed, whose fucking wedding was cancelled and his relationship got stronger. His wedding was fucking cancelled and his relationship got stronger. It's fucking mind-blowing and inspiring to me. And I look at myself with a fucking Ponzi painting in the background, yeah, fucking clawing at people to come on and get drunk with me so my podcast still gets hits because no one gives a shit when I record them on my own. It's beautiful to see all these wonderful humans who will step up and fucking reply to my text messages. That is what the lockdown is about and what inspires me in these moments. So, gentlemen, thank you for joining me on another Isolation Drunk Cast. You are all fucking mind-blowing and inspirational. It's been a pleasure, gents. Yeah, I'm quite drunk.
I'm hammered. Like,
when I saw James opening a second bottle of wine, I was like, I've never seen that before. This is big.
Like,
I've got through two bottles of gin. I'm really going for it. The point an hour ago when I tried to end the podcast was probably the strongest moment. But go ahead, go on.
No, like I've deliberately been not drinking much during lockdown, and it's been really nice to just fully drink during this and say a bunch of stupid shit. I don't mean anything that I've said for the last 2 hours.
It's been great. Guys, thank you all very much for tuning in.
I need to
go downstairs and do my one lockdown thing where we watch the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and that's our bonding shit.
I'm going to round things up by saying,
Ed,
Stu and Chris,
please tell your
shut up, James.
That I respect her so much, and I miss her as well.
She knows.
Stu and Chris have the Hardcore Listening podcast. It's fantastic.
No one listens to that.
James has perfect sound. Ed has lifers. Stu has off the beaten track.
Please, I do.
Ed also has an XFM podcast with Matt Crosby.
Thank you.
I know this shit. I've done my research. Don't try and question my professionalism. Again, thank you very much for all your wonderful
time. I just don't like it when
you
name drop XFM in the podcast because that's not a
Radio X. Radio X. I've had speakings to from the top people at Radio X that they will not credit anything that was formerly XFM. So Radio X, Ed Gamble and Matt Crosby, amazing. Thank you for tuning in, guys. It's been a fucking pleasure. See you
later. Lots of fun.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. If you survived all three parts, then good luck to you. I hope you're not also now going to go and throw up for several hours. I'll be back next week with a big twist and switch here. I've got Rutger Bregman returning. A lot of you will know that the Rutger Bregman episode was one of the best I've ever done. He's a historian. He's incredibly intelligent. He's wise. I'd describe him as wise. He's changed my life. Genuinely, there's things in my life I've permanently changed because of the conversations I've had with him and because of the books of his I've read. So, check it out. And thank you for surviving and apologies for any embarrassment calls here. I'll see you next week. Ta-ta. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.